Hey, this is Ed Stetzer Live, and I am Ed Stetzer, and we are broadcasting live. I'm not in my normal location where I broadcast from, Mariners Church there in Southern California. I'm actually in Houston, Texas, at the Lanier Theological Library, and in there I am here speaking at a series of lectures, and having this conversation sort of flowing from the cultural moment that we're in. So I'm actually here presenting. If you're in Houston area, you can still make it to the lectures tonight, again, at Lanier Theological Library. Just Google that, it shows up. The lecture I'm doing is kind of about the current state of our movement, what evangelical Christianity is, what it will be, what the future holds, and more. So I do want to encourage you to, if you're in the Houston area, come out and check that out as well. Thanks to them for letting us use here as a studio. My guest today is also going to talk about something kind of related to the cultural moment. I should introduce myself. So I'm Ed Stetzer. I'm the Dean of the Talbot School of Theology at Biola University. But for your purposes, I'm your host this and every week on Ed Stetzer Live. And our team and I put together a program to help encourage you, know, maybe understand the cultural moment, be like the people of Issachar who discerned the times and knew therein what they should do. So today we're going to talk about, well, kind of where we are when it comes to sharing our faith and the cultural moment. And it is indeed a strange cultural moment. If you had said to me in 2019 that we'd be talking about war in Europe and war in the Middle East and a possible forthcoming war in China, if you had told me in 2019 there'd be a pandemic and a global shutdown, an economic crisis and growing division and really a cultural convulsion that has gripped the entire world, I might not have believed you, yet here we are. If you had told me that I might have believed you that the culture was going to continue to move away from Christian beliefs and practices, that increasingly Christians would be losing their home field advantage in culture, that culture becomes increasingly secular and more aggressive in its secularism. I would have believed that. But if you would have told me in the midst of all that, that a movie would rock the box office about the Jesus People movement in the 1960s called Jesus Revolution, shocking people with the number of people who went to the movie, still playing in some actual theaters today. If you had told me in 2019 that there would be ads during the Super Bowl and all kinds of other sporting events, in some places, everywhere you go, and now the majority of Americans can recognize ads about Jesus as part of the He Gets Us campaign, I don't know that I would have believed you. If you told me in 2019 that four seasons now of a TV series on Jesus would go viral, so much to the place that it's now on the CW, a mainstream network. It was the largest crowdfunded project in history. And if you had told me that The Chosen would become the experience phenomenon that it is, I don't know what I believed you. And if you would have told me that we'd be talking about an Asbury revival again, used to lead the Billy Graham Center, I've done some scholarly work on revivals and have actually interviewed people from the Asbury revival, like the last one. And if you had told me in 2019 that we'd be talking about revivals on college campuses, I'm down here in Houston and people came up to me yesterday and said, well, we're seeing similar things at this campus and this campus. If you had told me that in 2019, I'm not sure I would have believed you. Yet, in the midst of all this, there's a lot of things going on at the same time. We have a cultural moment, kind of a cultural convulsion going on at the same time, an increasing secularization in culture, and simultaneously an increasing openness to Jesus, which leads us to our conversation today. So I mentioned the He Gets Us campaign, and I'm part of a group, we call it Leadership Council, that actually helps with, kind of advisor to, if you will, the He Gets Us campaign. And every other Tuesday, we have these calls. And on that call with me is now my good friend by the name of Kevin Palau. Now, you might recognize the name Palau because of his father, Luis Palau, and the Luis Palau Evangelistic, Luis Palau Association that has been really known around the world. Luis Palau was called the Billy Graham of Central America, the Hispanic Latino Billy Graham. Well, the Palau Association continues to do really amazing work. As a matter of fact, we'll be gathering together in Las Vegas next week, you know, working with pastors to help do some ministry in and around Las Vegas. There's all kinds of things that are going on. So Kevin Palau is now the president and CEO of the Luis Palau Association. Luis went on to be with the Lord recently. Kevin and the family continues on this important ministry. Kevin actually joined LPA, that's how they say it, Luis Palau Association, LPA, in 1985, began directing the day-to-day operation of the ministry in the late 90s. And under his leadership, they've actually united tens of thousands of churches in hundreds of cities to love and serve their communities and clearly share the good news of Jesus. We've just become friends. We were in Amsterdam recently together, working with the Pentecostal movement, talking more about evangelism. We've been in Las Vegas. I don't know. Amsterdam and Las Vegas are probably not two cities to lead with when you say you're traveling with somebody. Those aren't the most godly cities in the world, but the Lord Jesus is at work in those places as well. Kevin loves evangelism. I do. I hope you do. Kevin, thanks for joining us on Ed Stetzer Live.
Thank you so much, Ed. Yes, it's been an interesting season, and yet the good news is still good news, and it's exciting, exciting times to be thinking about evangelism.
Yeah, it really is. And so what we find, I think, a pretty open society, I think in part because of the cultural mess that we're in. I think that culturally convulsive moments actually cause people to be more open to, open to a lot of things. It's not always good things that they're open to. But when the world's not working, people look for something else. And I want them to look, and I know you want them to look, to the good news of Jesus. So tell us a little bit, like, for those who are not familiar with LPA and what you do and the festivals. I mean, just kind of give us that background story. And then we're going to talk about a resource called the Evangelism Masterclass. It's going to be free to everyone listening today. But tell us a little bit about the journey and what LPA is all about.
Yeah. So Palau, simple way to say it, is, was, like you said, my dad was this amazing evangelist, one of those guys that just could not stop sharing the good news in the ways you think of for a big evangelist. In other words, sometimes standing on a stage in front of hundreds of thousands of people, but just as excited when he was in his last days of stage 4 lung cancer, though he'd never smoked a cigarette in his life, sharing the good news with the nurses and the people there in the hospital. He just had an infectious joy. He really believed the good news was amazingly good for everybody, and he had a winsomeness. So I grew up in this with Luis Palau's dad. And so for almost 40 years now, worked with the organization. And, you know, we did initially Billy Graham style crusades. That's a term that, you know, is kind of funny to use, and we wouldn't use it these days as much for, you know, it's not as a winsome a term, I would say.
The word crusade you're talking about, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the word crusade. Sorry. Yeah, the word crusade. But really the idea that we adopted from Billy Graham, you know, if you're going to copy someone, it's great to copy from the best. Billy had such a, same like that, a winsomeness, an ability to unite the body of Christ, which was, I think, part of the secret sauce, is how do you get churches of every denomination that love the Lord, want to see the good news put forward? How do you get them working together in a city? So we adopted that Billy Graham model for decades. But in Portland, Oregon, which is our hometown, for no better reason than my mom's an Oregonian, and they met in 1960 at Multnomah School of the Bible, it was called then. And, over the years, as the culture has shifted, as you well described, Portland became kind of a testing ground, a proving ground, as culture shifted and we recognized, like, the same old thing, the gospel doesn't change, but how we try to deliver it has got to keep adapting if we actually want to be in conversation and see people far from Christ engage with the good news. So Portland was a place where we went away from the traditional crusade model to an outdoor music festival. This was 20 plus years ago. Right. So that doesn't feel that new. But at the time...
No, but I think most people would think of Portland and think of, you know, you're saying it really nice and like it's weird. It's kind of crazy to most of us and the rest of the country.
It is crazy.
So you're trying to figure out how do you communicate the gospel into a place that the rest of it... Of course, I live in California now, so there's plenty of crazy. But okay, keep going. Sorry.
So you're right. How do you share the good news in a place that has the largest naked bike ride in the world? You know, 15,000 people doing that every year. And people saw... Wherever you were in the world, you saw the violent protesting in the wake of George Floyd's murder. All these sorts of things have made a challenging place for the gospel. So, you know, we feel like it's a God thing that we're planted here, because if we can do things that can engage people with the gospel here in Portland, it can work in other places too. So we shifted toward a festival approach, a two-day music festival. We added in a community service aspect, because for many people that have already decided why they don't follow Jesus, and it's because of their perceptions of the church being against everything, but they're not quite sure what we're for. So in our context in Portland, we did something pretty simple. We went to see the mayor of Portland, who was a very, very liberal, progressive guy, and said, you know, we'd like to change the narrative. We don't want the church to be known primarily for what we're against. We'd love to be known for what we're for. And we are for the city. We think of Jeremiah 29:7, seek the shalom of the city to which I've carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it. For if it prospers, you too will prosper. So we have this mindset now of, as many, many churches in Portland, of how do we become part of the community? How do we help make Portland a better place? Because that's certainly building the kingdom. But how do we do so in a way that conveys the gospel? So we've been able to mobilize tens of thousands of Jesus followers in Portland to partner with our public schools to try to make that a better place for kids, to make the foster care system stronger, and, you know, lots of practical ways to serve. But we also really, really, really want to see the gospel go forward in people's lives. So we have a thing called Together PDX. PDX is our airport code. And that's just a name for hundreds of churches that love the Lord, trying to serve the community better, share the good news together. And that's part of what the Palau team does. We do these big festivals around the world. We try to help the church in various cities come together around the gospel. So those are some of the things we do. We do digital evangelism. We help those with the gift of evangelism hone their skills. You know, the Holy Spirit gives people, some people, a deeper passion and a greater effectiveness in sharing the good news. We want to come alongside those people. So if it's about evangelism and uniting the local church, we'd like to be in that space.
I know you're working around like engaging cities broadly, and I think, and that's part of what we're doing and coming up in Las Vegas as well. So I'm excited about that. I want to talk a little bit more about that. But I mean, you know, I mean, the reality is, I mean, evangelism's fallen on hard times.
Yes,
we just, absolutely. You know, I mean, when I hear people talk about evangelism, not necessarily in our circles, because, you know, we're passionate about this, and but when I hear other people talking about evangelism, it usually has some sort of joke about how people done it badly, or some sort of, you know, bad memory about how it was done in the past, and there's not a positive vision for sharing the gospel today. And maybe that's the case with our listeners. And by the way, I haven't mentioned our listeners. Let me invite them to call in. Maybe you got questions about evangelism and about sharing the gospel. We're going to give you some resources, share some resources a little later in the program. But our number is 877-548-3675. 877-548-3675. But Kevin, so here it is. You know, it's 2023. Let Christians just live their lives and leave everybody else alone. Why is it necessary? If I'm a Christian, why does evangelism have to fit? Can't I just love Jesus, you know, do my daily devotions, love my kids? Why do I got to share the faith? Or do I have to share the faith?
Well, yeah, it's a good point, Ed. And many people feel that way. They feel like it's so hard. I don't want to be criticized or put down or be viewed a certain way. So I get it. I mean, in a place like Portland, the fears are accentuated, because there are plenty of people in Portland that have a very negative attitude toward the church, or particularly toward evangelicals. So there's this big cultural headwind blowing cold and hard in our face that says, be nice, you know, what you believe is fine, but please don't share it with me. But we have a clear biblical mandate. We are called, the purpose of the church, there are several purposes, but certainly obeying this great commission, this command of Jesus to go everywhere and make disciples. You can't make disciples without calling people to follow Jesus. And I think too, you know, if you sit and think about the ways that Christ has changed your life, if you genuinely have experienced his love, you experience the love, the joy, the peace, the good things that come from knowing Jesus, why would you keep that to yourself? Why would you not find your way of sharing the good news? So yeah, people are afraid because they think that if you're going to get involved in evangelism, it means doing it in a way that's maybe not your style. Our friend Mark Middleberg does a great job reminding us that there are lots of different styles and that the way God made you, there is a way for you to share the good news that fits your personality. Not everybody is like my friend Chris Overstreet here in Portland, who goes on the streets almost every day, but every weekend with like 50 other people, and they have cold turkey conversations on the streets of Portland with people and ask some questions and share the good news. Like, I don't share the gospel that way. That would be hard for me. But there's lots of ways to share the good news. And mostly it involves being sensitive to the Holy Spirit and looking for those opportunities and not being afraid to step into places and just be real about the fact that if Jesus Christ has changed your life, why would you be embarrassed about that? And look for ways to let people know how committed you are to sharing the good news. And just the fact that you love Jesus and you believe Jesus is for everybody.
Good, 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 good. We're going to continue our conversation with Kevin Palau in just a moment. We're having an important conversation. I'm going to invite your calls, 877-548-3675. Talk about sharing our faith, 877-548-3675. Hey, we're back. Ed Stetzer Live. I see some calls are coming in. We're going to get to them in just a few minutes. We're talking to Kevin Palau of the of LPA, the Luis Palau Association. We're really talking about people sharing their faith. Matter of fact, for some of you, you hear me, people sharing your faith, and you turn the dial on your radio station. Of course, I'm dating myself when I say turn the dial, because most of you don't even have a dial, but that's another story for another minute. Because here's the reality. When you talk about evangelism, I love evangelism. I'm passionate about it. But when I write books, my one publisher said to me one time, don't put the word evangelism in the title of the book because people don't buy books with the word evangelism in the title, which is fascinating to me. When I changed jobs from Lifeway, I was the vice president of a company called Lifeway, and I went to the Billy Graham Center. This was about 7.5 years ago. I served at Wheaton for 7 years at the Billy Graham Center. The Washington Post asked me to write an article about why I was changing jobs. Strange thing, but I had shared a little bit in a conference why I was changing jobs. They said, would you write about this? Kind of in their, it was called Acts of Faith in their religion section of opinion. And I said, basically, Jesus' last words, he gives four commissions between his resurrection and his ascension. Jesus' last words should be our first priority. They put the title on the article. Authors don't pick the titles, editors do. And it said, call yourself a Christian, start talking about Jesus Christ. And it got some people riled up. The comment section kind of went crazy. It was the most shared article on the Washington Post website for, I think, about 36 hours. I think it was being shared by people who were mad because it's an unusual call to evangelism in the Washington Post. But man, I mean, Kevin, today, evangelism is, it's interesting. Christians often devalue it. Ironically, like in the business world, they're using the word evangelist all the time. They want evangelists for their products.
That's right.
Christians
that's right.
seem to be afraid of evangelism. The culture is often mad at people who share their faith. The business world wants to have different kinds of evangelists. How do we talk about evangelism in this cultural moment then?
I think we've got to, and maybe sometimes there's other ways to describe it, you know, if that word is so loaded. But the bottom line is, are we sharing? You know, sharing is a positive word. We teach our kids to share. If you have something good and someone else wants it, you want to share it. So sharing our faith, reaching out to people. I mean, but the bottom line is, it is a joyful thing to see someone's life come to Christ. I think when we can take the pressure off ourselves that somehow our job is to convert people, I think maybe sometimes that's part of the problem. You know, we think of friends and neighbors or our own kids or grandkids or whatever your situation is that feel jaded and hard. And if you think, what am I going to do to convert them or change everything? That's not what we're called to do. That's a work of the Holy Spirit. We can't save anyone. We can't change people, but we can deliver this message of good news. We can help people experience the joy of following Jesus Christ. So I think that there are ways to try to encourage believers to be a little bit more joyful and bold of expressing the goodness of God that you've experienced in your own life. So that's what I find is most helpful, is just finding a way to share what you consider to be good news. When there's so much bad news, so much division, so much animosity, and we've got a message that has stood strong for thousands of years, that shaped all of Western culture, and it's about this person called Jesus, I think we can find ways to share about Jesus that are compelling and interesting to people. The He Gets Us campaign has begun to find ways to do that. Because as you've hinted at, people are interested in Jesus. Jesus has had more impact on the human race than any other single person. And for that reason alone, how do we get people thinking and talking about Jesus? That, I think, is interesting.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. So good. And I want to encourage you to join us with your phone calls, 877-548-3675. And, you know, Kevin mentioned He Gets Us campaign. Kevin and I help with that. And we're, you know, the campaign is geared towards, you know, the media campaign. So you've seen it. Matter of fact, you might have a thought or a question about it. You can call 877-548-3675. So the campaign, the box that the campaign is in, is they're trying to get people to talk about Jesus. Kevin and I are trying to really help Christians share the gospel with people who are have questions about Jesus. So we're happy to see the opportunities that are before us, but at the same time, it's sometimes harder to get Christians to talk about Jesus than it is to get non-Christians to ask questions about Jesus. So, yeah. So why is that? Anyway, 877-548-3675 is our number. Kevin, tell us a little bit. You know, you've been I guess you and I together. I'm not sure who started helping being an advisor to the He Gets Us campaign first, you or me. I think it might have been you.
I can't remember.
We've been doing this for a while, and we know that, for example, through we both partner together with an organization called Glue, and through Explorers, through He Gets Us and other campaigns, I've been told that over 300,000 people have been referred to local churches. I think It's now 500,000 people have started Bible reading plans. So explain to people why, what are these ads tapping into that people seem to have an openness when maybe, I mean, it's sometimes Christians are convinced that nobody's going to listen about Jesus at all, yet there's an openness. Explain that. What's going on in culture?
Well, I think, you know, there is still, certainly historically, we're in the middle of this shift, and things are always shifting, but you still have a large number of people that have grown up with a Christian background. They've got Christian parents or grandparents. It's not that they've never heard the name of Jesus. It's that they've gotten their view of faith or their view of Christianity, at least, so wrapped up in many, many, many things, political kinds of division, et cetera, et cetera. But there's still an attractiveness to Jesus himself. And when some significant marketplace leaders felt the need to try to do something to move the needle in sharing our faith and getting people thinking about Jesus, they did a lot of research. And, you know, I'm not a researcher. You are, Ed, so you might comment, you know, if I say something that's not quite right. But they did a lot of research. And what they found was, trying to do a series of ads that was going to refurbish the image of the church, that's going to be tough. But interest in Jesus, people feeling like there's something compelling about him, that he would be a great example to follow. Even people that would say, like, I am in no way, shape, or form a Christian, but would I want my own kids or grandkids to follow the example of Jesus? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So they said, okay, this is interesting. And again, I'll get the numbers wrong, but what sticks in my mind is that there's about a third of the country that you could call spiritually open, not followers of Jesus, but spiritually open. And the campaign is really targeting that group of people, tens and tens of millions of people that aren't hardcore atheists. I could tell you my 10 reasons why these Christians are absolutely wrong, but people that are like, I've drifted away from the church, I'm not so much interested in that, but there's something about Jesus. That's what these ads are targeted to do, to pull up maybe even some emotion around the way Jesus lived, the things he taught. It's so permeated into our society. Even the idea of loving your neighbor and many of the justice kinds of issues come from Jesus's teaching. And so reminding people of that, and reminding people that following Jesus makes the world a better place. So I think we're trying to bridge from people that kind of think Jesus is interesting. We want eventually, of course, to bridge them over to the good news itself and calling people to follow Jesus. But I think it's an interesting approach. Many, many people the vast majority of people in the country have seen the ads. Millions of people have gone to the website. And as you said, when 500,000 people have signed up for YouVersion reading plans to go to the source documents and see what Jesus said about himself, I view that as really positive, but it's still up to us as in everyday Jesus followers to take advantage of things like that and maybe ask people, hey, did you see those spots? What do you think? And what's your kind of background with Jesus? What do you think? I think if we could just get people engaged in conversation and find out what they're thinking, we could really move the gospel forward if we would just be willing to have more spiritual conversations with people.
So good. So good. Our guest today is Kevin Pallau. We're talking through, well, sharing the gospel, sharing the faith with others. So just to let you know, we're going to talk about more of this in the next segment. I'm also going to take your calls. If you want to be on air with us, it's 877-548-3675. Again, that number is 877-548-3675. So what I'm going to share with you in just a bit is something about a resource that Kevin and I have worked together to develop through LPA. It's called the Evangelism Masterclass. And if you go to edstetzerlive.com and you just click through, it'll take you to the Evangelism Masterclass link. It is free. I'm going to double the price. It is still free because we developed it for resources for Christians. And it's got, well, I'll tell you more about it on the other side. But for now, give us a call. Let's talk more. 877-548-3675. Hey, we're back at Stetzer Live. I'm your host, Ed Stetzer. My guest today is Kevin Pallau of the Luis Pallau Association. We were talking just before the break. We were talking about we're talking about evangelism in general, but we're talking about a resource that Kevin and I put together with his team at the Luis Pallau Association in partnership with GLU and in kind of what we're working toward here is a resource for people to share their faith. We call it a masterclass because it's got some just people probably you know. Let me just share a few folks who are in this masterclass. And again, Kevin and his team, brilliantly put this and wove this together. But people like Nona Jones from YouVersion, used to be head of the faith engagement for YouTube. Lisa Fields, she leads Jude 3 Apologetics Ministry geared towards African-American leaders. Christine Keynes, and many of you know Christine Keynes' name. Wilfredo de Jesus from the Assemblies of God. Mark Middleberg, who just does an amazing job helping you find your evangelistic style. Carrie Headington, who works with the Anglicans in Dallas. We've got, I could go on and on, but maybe I should. Rebecca McLaughlin, who's well-known author, writer, speaker, Jay Kim, pastor, J.D. Greer, some of you know that name as well, Josh White, and other. And of course, more Pallaus. We love more Pallaus. So
there's always more.
Always good to have more Hosanna Wongs on there, Greg Steer, and others. I skipped a few people just for the sake of time. So, I mean, it kind of, Kevin, we're old enough to remember the Super Friends. The kids today might think of the Avengers, where like you have all these really that's right. well-known people in evangelism and ministry. So that maybe even of that self, I mean, that's a plus for some people, but it's like, is that going to be like over my head? Is this going to be like jumping too deep into the deep end of the pool? Tell us a little bit how the resource flows and what's the thinking behind that.
Well, we really see the whole thing as kind of looking at Jesus's life, how he shared the good news, how he lived out the good news and shared the good news. And I would say it's absolutely not going to be over anyone's heads. It's eight just 25-minute segments. So these are short and sweet. It's something that a person could go through on their own or as a family easily, but it's really designed for like small groups in churches or even for a whole church to go through it. I'm on the elder team at a great non-denominational church, Cedar Mill Bible Church in the west side of Portland, Oregon. And our staff are going through it now, and we're going to try to take as many people in our church of about 600 through it as we can starting in January, because it really is bite-sized chunks that really doesn't assume anything. It's assuming that you're someone that doesn't feel gifted in evangelism, who has all the fears and concerns and questions, but it's going to take you just step by step. How do I understand the gospel? How do I start gospel conversation? It acknowledges the challenging times we're in, but it really has this attitude of, you can do it. I guarantee you go through this course, I guarantee you that you will feel more confident in sharing your faith. And I think that you'll find your own way and style to do it. You'll go maybe from being afraid of it to saying like, I think I can do this. Maybe my church can become more effective. So we would love to have you check that out. And as you said, it's absolutely free. And I'm you know, already over 2,400 churches in about a month since it's been available.
Yeah.
2,400 different churches have already started using it.
Yep. What's that? They told me about 100-day downloading. Hey, let me mention too, I mentioned our to call in a few times, and I've seen many of you call in. Your number shows up on the board and then it disappears. They've told me that we're having problems with our phone line. So if I'm not going to give the number again for now. If we get it fixed, I'll give the number again. You can try again. My apologies for those of you who called in with good questions and some good comments. Yeah, we have call screener, and so I get a little bit what they're saying. And one of the callers said, you know, we got to help people be bold sharing the gospel. And and I think ultimately the question for us is, how are we to be bold in sharing the gospel, Kevin?
Well, I think, you know, boldness, sometimes when you hear the word boldness, what it implies to people is aggressive. You know, I'm going to be bold. I'm not going to let anybody stop me. I'm going to just bowl people over. Go, 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 go. That's boldness. That's a type of boldness. I don't see boldness quite that way. I see boldness as being willing to engage in gospel conversation. So I do think that we do need to help people become more bold. And I think if you've experienced the joy of following Jesus, there is a joy in trying to find your own way to share it. So I agree with the person. My prayer would be, I think that's part of revival. Ed, you referenced Asbury. One of the things that always comes out of these kind of renewals is a greater joy in sharing the good news. If you watch that revolution, you know, the amazing movie, saw that in the people there.
Yeah.
Joyful sharing of the good news. So that kind of boldness we need.
Yeah, love that. Love that. Agree wholeheartedly. Okay, they tell me the phones are back working. So let me give you the number. It's 877-548-3675. And, you know, we're more than halfway through the show. So jump on. If you want to call in with a question or comment, jump on it now. 877-548-3675. Now the way the kind of a recurring theme is helping people who maybe don't feel like super evangelists. Now, you actually said a minute ago you don't have the gift of evangelism. I actually don't believe there's a gift of evangelism. I think there are evangelists.
I know.
One of the great things about having a conversation, we don't always have to agree. But if there's gifts of evangelism, or if there are evangelists, which is more what I think, way, part of the concern I think we all have is a lot of Christians say, well, I don't have the gift of evangelism, therefore I don't need to share the gospel. Yet the call to share the gospel is for everyone. So how do we make sure people embrace it for everyone?
Well, I think, you know, we are all called to be witnesses, no question. And a witness is simply sharing what they've seen and experienced. If you're called to be a witness in a case, you don't have to be an expert. It's like, you saw something, you experienced something, you saw that hit and run, that you're qualified. I saw something. This is what I saw. So that is the only qualification to be a witness to Jesus is, have you seen or experienced something of Jesus in your life? Doesn't mean you feel like you're the super Christian. You have never messed up. Your very challenges in your faith are often the things that will make someone more interested. You don't have to come across like, I'm the Bible answer man. I know everything. I'm going to answer every question. When your answer at times to the hard questions is, wow, I struggle with that very thing. I don't have a great answer to that. I really, really struggle. But in my struggle, I find myself turning to the Lord and just acknowledging, I don't know what's going on. I'm having this doubt. The more honest we are about our own weaknesses and struggles, but that Jesus is there with us in the midst of our pain, I find that so refreshing to people who maybe their experience is these Christians think they know everything. They think they're better than everybody else. A little humility goes a long way.
Does everybody, and actually I know some Christians disagree with this. I was talking to John Dixon about this, the well-known Australian apologist and I guess evangelist, public theologian. Does everybody have a responsibility to verbally articulate the gospel? And if not, what is everybody's responsibility to advance the mission?
Well, I personally believe, whether you'd call it a responsibility, whether you call it a joyful duty, I think that every believer should be prepared. I think we're all called to be prepared in season and out of season, be prepared to give an answer. So to me, if we're living in provocative ways, if we're living in ways, my wife and I went with our son for his 30th birthday and his wife to Les Miserables last night in the Keller Auditorium in Portland. I was in tears, you know, that if you've seen that, it's such a Christian play. I mean, yeah. it's beautiful.
You know, ironically, written by somebody who was very anti-Christian, but he reflected the mood of the time. And it's a powerful story.
Yes. And that, you know, so and the reason I even reference it is there's a part where this bishop, you know, responds in a confounding way when he easily could have turned, you know, Jean Valjean in and would have been the end of his Jean Valjean's life. But he basically comes in and says, no, you know, he didn't steal this stuff. Here's more. And then he challenges the person. Sorry, I'm going to get choked up.
I know. It's powerful. But, you know, and the song goes to love another person is to see the face of God at that
very
moment.
See the face of God. Yeah. So I think there is something compelling about Jesus followers living like Jesus. So I think to live like Jesus and to try to make him known. So yes, are we all supposed to share the good news in verbal ways? I think we need to be prepared to. I think we need to point people toward Jesus. I don't think it means that every conversation we need to kind of be trying to get to, where are you with Jesus? Have you accepted him into your heart? I'm going to tell you how you can do that right now. Many times that's not the place people are at, but I think being prayerful, looking for ways to love and serve people, I think that confounding love of Jesus is what is attractive to people. And I think we need, do we need more of that in the divisive times we're in? If the people that, let's say the half the country that would be, you know, more on the progressive side or whatever, they perceive Christians to be, you know, one party or the other. If you could find a way to love in a confounding way someone that you would disagree with vehemently on social issues, that's a Jesus-like thing to do. Jesus never shied away from loving people even that he disagreed with. And I think we've got to be those kind of people.
Good, good, good. We're going to continue our conversation with your calls. We're going to jump right into your calls. We've got several online, but last chance if you want to jump in, 877-548-3675. I want to tell our callers, I need you to be ready with a quick question or a comment so that we have enough time to fit in multiple calls. Remember, callers, be ready to go, quick question or comment, 877-548-3675. We're going to continue our conversation with Kevin Palau of the Luis Palau Association. Technological difficulty, and I had to switch over to the telephone, but I'm here, so I sound a little different, but just stay with me. We're going to jump right to our calls. The Evangelism Masterclass, by the way, every time we have a resource on the show, if you go to edstetzerlive.com, it's always linked there. Raymond, I saw your call from Nashville, and so if you just go to edstetzerlive.com, the resources will always be linked there. So let's go first to Eric in Florida. Eric, you're live on the air with your question, your comment. Go right ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I just want to give a really quick comment, compliment to the Palau organization as well as Ed Stetzer. I went to one of your festivals about 2 years ago in Melbourne, Florida. It was awesome. It had a big effect on my life. Yeah.
Wow, that is so encouraging.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Now, I also have a question for you. I am at the point in my walk where I have accepted evangelism as a powerful tool. I have a lot of ideas regarding a ministry, but I'm not a ministry and I'm essentially alone. It's almost like me versus the world. And I just wanted to see if you have maybe an advice or anything you could lead me to that can keep me grounded to make sure whatever unique way that I'm thinking about sharing, evangelizing online,
yeah,
that I can, you know, keep it, I want to say, biblical and not, you know, have to worry about doubts or things that might arise, you know, from the world, if you want to say, that can cause me to back down, if you will.
Good, good, good. Let's Kevin jump in because our time is short. Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, I would say... You know, stay grounded in a local church. I think that's always a biblical thing to do. Be involved in a local church. So, you know, as an evangelist, we always challenge other evangelists. There's thousands of evangelists we partner with. Put your roots deep in a local church. Don't do your evangelism necessarily just on your own. Do it through the local church. Use your gift to help encourage others within your own congregation to also improve their evangelism. And we do have a thing called the Global Network of Evangelists with Palau. You can go to palau.org and find out about it. And we try to help and come alongside people that feel they might have this calling to be an evangelist. So if that's kind of you, go to palau.org and we'd love to try to help you.
Love it. Good, 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 good. Let's go right quick to Mary in Aurora, Illinois. Mary, you're live on the air. Go ahead and right away with your question.
Well, I just wondered why, if we're not supposed to do obscene language, if we're not supposed to lust after pretty women or whatever, I'm losing my voice. Why did God make women like Anne Margaret, who appears at the USO shows for Bible? Why did God make her so pretty if he didn't want guys to whistle at her? And why did he make sex? Why did he make sex feel so good?
Okay, Mary, that's fascinating. It's a little off the topic at hand. We were talking about evangelism, but I do think ultimately that God creates a perfect world. The world's become broken and lost, and our desires, our loves, are often disordered rather than focused on the way that God would want them to be. So, but okay, thank you, Mary, for your call. Raymond in Nashville, you're live on the air. What's your question or your comment?
I was just following up on what the website was. I heard you mention the website earlier in the show, and I couldn't understand what it was, but I heard you mention it earlier, edstetzer.com, and I found it. So somewhere
Ed
website,
Stetzer,
we can find the evangelism.
Right. No worries. edstetzerlive.com. edstetzer.com is my website, but edstetzerlive.com. But super good. Thank you for giving us a chance to share it again. And remember, it's free. And thank you, Raymond, for your call. Teresa, live on the air. Go ahead with your question or your comment. Teresa, are you there from Tampa, Florida? You're live. Okay, I don't think Teresa's there. We're going to go to Jim. Jim, you're live on the air with your question or your comment. Please go right ahead.
Yes, sir. I was approached by this. Love your show, by the way. I was approached by this lady, you know, regarding a false church, you know, and then I was wondering if the police, for public safety reasons, have a unit that infiltrates gangs. I was wondering if it would be wrong for a ministry to, you know, do the same thing, go into this church, make friends with the new people in there, and then maybe go to coffee with them and tell them, you know, the truth.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Good, Jim. Yeah, I think it's a fascinating question, and I'll have Kevin weigh in just a second. I would just say first, I don't think you need to infiltrate a church to have coffee with somebody in it and share the truths of the gospel. So I would find ways to do that, share the truths of the gospel. There are false teachings out there as well. I think probably you don't want to use misleading means to bring to a greater truth. But Kevin, just in general,
I would say to it. I think your impulse is right. You know, we want people to know the truth. And oftentimes people that are sucked into these false teachings have a deep desire to know God and know the truth. But I think you're right. I don't think you need to be tricky about it. I think you can try to build relationships with people there, and if they're willing to go out for coffee, share your experience and try to help them see, you know, the truth by taking them to the Bible directly. God bless you if that's your calling. And I would say don't hesitate to do the same kind of things going out for coffee with people that might not be as challenging. Sometimes people that are in those that are actually attending those kinds of false churches are very well grounded in dealing with people like us. But if God's called you to do it, I'd say do it.
At a surface level. Yeah, they sort of know our surface level arguments, but I think helping people understand more deeply the truths of God is always something that's a great thing to do. But do it in a way that's above board and clarity. And they'll probably want to meet with you anyway, because they probably want to argue with you, and that's okay as well. Just kind of figure out what your call is. Now I would say too that when we're talking about the Evangelism Masterclass, that's not really driven by apologetics or, you know, counter cult resources. Mm-hmm. There are lots of good resources that we would point to for that. So, Kevin, I want to kind of talk a little bit more about the Evangelism Masterclass. Let me remind everyone, you can go to edstetzerlive.com. We always just do that because it's easier than giving links every week. But if you go to edstetzerlive.com, you can find the link to the masterclass, to Kevin's ministry, to Luis Palau Association. It's all right there. So how, I mean, you got these sessions, they go through and they have different themes, and you're going to take your whole church through it, or you can take your elders through it, or you take your small group leaders to it. What's the hope by the time people go through this related to their evangelistic engagement?
Yeah, I think our hope is that people will gain some skills that make them more apt to actually get into gospel conversations. And that's the way that I would view it. We want people to feel confident enough that when they're having, when they're just going through life, having a conversation with their neighbor, a coworker, that they're prepared to ask the kind of spiritual questions that lead to a deeper opportunity to engage with the gospel. So I think our hope is that people will be more equipped and able and willing to share the good news or share their testimony. So it's pretty simple. You're not going to be prepared to teach an apologetics master's level class. That's not the point. But for most people, what they need is I'd say equal parts inspiration and equipping. So part of this, I think you'll leave more inspired that you can do it, that God can use you just the way he made you to be a part of bearing witness to the good news of Jesus.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is we got Mark Middleburg in there, and Mark has a resource on finding your own evangelistic style that's there as well. Matter of fact, we should just encourage people to get that resource on finding your own evangelistic style as well. He talks about contagious Christianity and more. But all of that and more you can find. Go to edstetzerlive.com. You'll find those resources there. And let me thank my guest, Kevin Palau, for joining me today and being a friend and a partner. Also, thanks to our behind-the-scenes team at Moody Radio, my producer, Karen Hendren, and my engineer, are you ready? Not Courtney Young, who's awesome, but Bob Moreau, who's awesome. So we're glad to have him as well. Anthony's on the phones as well. We got a great team who bring the show to you each and every week. To listen to the program again, I hope you will, go to edstetzerlive.com or the Moody Radio app. You can also connect with us through social media, Ed Stetzer Live on Twitter and other places as well. Go to edstetzerlive.com and get this free resource. I'm really excited about it. I want you to have it for you. It's free. And Ed Stetzer Live is a production of Moody Radio. It's a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Hey, thanks so much for listening.